The Outlier. This is the story of Chateau Aubryon in Pessac-Léognan Bordeaux, written by Lisa Perotti Brown for The Wine Palette. Chateau Aubryon has always occupied an enviable, if somewhat awkward, position in Bordeaux, the first growth that doesn't behave like the others. It sits outside the Médoc thoroughfare on the gravel soils of Pessac-Léognan, hemmed in today by the creeping suburbs of the city that made its reputation. It is older than its peers, more intellectually constructed, and at its best, more unsettling. Aubryon doesn't shout. It insinuates. Chateau Haut-Brion's distinction begins in the ground. The estate's gravel terrace, formed by ancient alluvial deposits, is layered with quartz stones that trap heat and fractured subsoils of clay, sand, and limestone that regulate water with unnerving precision. This is not the brute force Cabernet Sauvignon architecture of Pauillac. Here, Merlot plays an unusually prominent role, often equaling or exceeding Cabernet Sauvignon in the vineyard, shaping wines that are less about muscle and more about texture, aromatic layering, and persistence. Smoke, warm stones, tobacco leaf, truffle, these are not marketing cliches at Aubryon. They are signatures that recur with almost forensic consistency. Long before Bordeaux became codified into rankings and reputations, Aubryon had already figured out something essential, that wine could be defined by place and sold as such. In the 16th century, Jean de Pontac assembled the estate and, crucially, began selling the wine under the property's name. That sounds obvious now, yet it was radical then. By the time English diarists and courtiers were noting Haut-Brion at the table of Charles II of England in the 1660s, the idea of Chateau-branded fine wine had already taken hold. When the 1855 classification was drawn up, Haut-Brion's inclusion as the only non-Médoc first growth was an acknowledgement that the estate had been operating at that level long before the Médoc's marshes were fully drained and planted. Yet terroir and history only get you so far. What has kept Haut-Brion from becoming a museum piece is continuity, particularly the kind that doesn't attract headlines. The Delmas family is central to that story. If Haut-Brion has a house style, it is not an accident. It is the result of decades of disciplined, almost stubborn stewardship, most notably under Jean-Bernard Delmas. Taking over in 1961, Jean-Bernard Delmas presided over more than four decades of winemaking, a tenure that would be unthinkable today. His approach was not to chase trends or to modernize in the superficial sense, but to refine, incrementally, relentlessly. He oversaw critical technical upgrades, including the introduction of stainless steel fermentation tanks in the 1960s, early by Bordeaux standards, and later, a move toward parcel-by-parcel vinification that allowed the estate to express its complex soils with far greater precision. Under his watch, Aubryon became cleaner, more exact, and more consistent, without losing its essential character. That balance, innovation, without stylistic drift, is harder than it sounds, and most estates fail at it. If Jean-Bernard Delmas defined modern Aubryon, his son, Jean-Philippe Delmas, has sharpened it. Taking over in 2003, Jean-Philippe inherited not just a vineyard, but a philosophy. Respect the site, understand every parcel, and intervene only when necessary, but do it precisely. Under his leadership, the estate has pushed further into detailed vineyard mapping, clonal selection, and micro-vinification. The numbers hint at the scale of that work. More than 500 different vine clones across the property, each contributing nuance to the final blend. The result is a wine that can feel almost architectural in its construction, yet never loses its sense of place. What's striking when tasting across vintages, such as the recent 1992 to 2015 vertical hosted by the Commanderie de Bordeaux-Dallas chapter, led by Jean-Philippe Delmas, is how little Aubryon bends to fashion. Warmer vintages like 2009 and 2010 show power, certainly, but they are still framed by that unmistakable gravelly signature. Even in years where other first growths veer toward opulence, Haute-Brion holds something back. The 1998, 2009, 2010, and 2015 stand out not because they are bigger, but because they are more complete. Wines where fruit, structure, and tertiary complexity align with unusual clarity. Ownership has played its part in maintaining that discipline. Since its acquisition in 1935 by Clarence Dillon, Haute-Brion has remained under the control of the Dillon family, now represented by Prince Robert of Luxembourg. In a region prone to stylistic swings, that continuity matters. It has allowed the estate to invest heavily in vineyards, cellars, and people, without losing sight of what makes Haute-Brion distinct. The vineyard itself is relatively modest in size by first growth standards, roughly 51 hectares for red varieties and just 3 hectares for white. The red plantings, about 45% Merlot, 44% Cabernet Sauvignon, 10% Cabernet Franc, and a touch of Petit Verdot, underscore how different Haute-Brion is from its Médoc counterparts. The high proportion of Merlot in the Grand Vin, almost always surpassing Cabernet Sauvignon, sets it apart from other Médoc first growths, thanks to the site's clay gravel soils. However, there are a few recent vintages in which Cabernet Sauvignon exceeds Merlot in the final blend, including 2007, 2008, 2010, 2011, and 2024. The 2010 vintage has the highest percentage of Cabernet Sauvignon, at 57%, with 23% Merlot and 20% Cabernet Franc. The White Château Haute-Brion Blanc remains one of the world's most sought-after dry whites, blended from Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc in varying amounts. Sometimes it is Semillon dominant. In other vintages, Sauvignon Blanc takes the lead. Produced in small quantities, it commands significant attention from those who recognize its rarity. It focuses less on exuberant aromas and more on tension, texture, and aging potential. When young, it may seem almost restrained, citrus oil, white peach, subtle spices, but with age, it develops into something more complex, layered with honeyed richness, toasted nuts, lanolin, and a distinctive flinty minerality that reflects the gravel soils of Pessac. I recently tasted a 1964 that was truly breathtaking. The Blanc, in many ways, is like a great red wine, structured, age-worthy, and unapologetically serious, often reaching its peak decades after the vintage. In a region where white wines are often overshadowed, Haute-Brion Blanc doesn't compete. It operates on a completely different level. And then there is the chateau's setting. Haute-Brion is no longer surrounded by open countryside. It sits within the fabric of Bordeaux's urban sprawl, a vineyard enclave encircled by roads, houses, and the pressure of development. In lesser hands, that might feel like a compromise. Here, it feels like context. Bordeaux has always been a commercial city first and an agricultural one second. Haute-Brion embodies that tension better than any other first growth. The wines themselves can be challenging in youth, reserved, structured, sometimes even severe. This is not a chateau that aims to charm early. But given time, Haute-Brion reveals layers that few wines can match. Smoke, crushed rocks, earth, dried flowers, a kind of mineral resonance that seems to echo long after the glass is empty. If the Médoc first growths are statements of power, Haute-Brion is something else entirely, a study in control, in restraint, in accumulated knowledge. It is a wine shaped as much by people as by place, and in the hands of Jean Bernard and Jean-Philippe Delmas, that human element has been as precise and enduring as the gravel beneath the vines.